Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Yud Aleph of Melachim Bet. Pasuk starts off by turning its attention now to the southern kingdom. The king of the southern kingdom of Yehuda had been killed by Yehu as well. So the Pasuk tells us that Ataliyahu, Eim Achaziyahu, Achaziyahu's mother, who is of the family of Omri, of Achav, Re'ata ki meit bina, she sees that her son is dead. Ve'takom ve'te'abit et kol zera hamamlacha, so she wipes out the entire royal family. And her point is to take rule for herself. Another example of a powerful woman who is also immoral or amoral, has no sense of morality. So ve'tikach Yehosheva bat hamelech Yoram achot Achaziyahu. So Yehosheva, who's the son, the daughter of the previous king, who is the sister of Achaziyahu, et Yoash ben Achaziyah, she takes Yoash, who is the son of Achaziyah, vatignov oto mitoch b'nei hamelech hamumatim, and she hides him away from among all of the royal princes who were being killed, oto v'nikto, him and his nursemaid, v'chadar hamitot. So Chadar HaMitot is called the bed chamber, and it's located above, according to Rashi, above the Kodesh HaKodeshim in the Beit HaMikdash. So this will become eventually a problem for Yoash, for this boy, at least in Rashi and Chazal's reading of it, because Rashi and Chazal note that in Divrei HaYamim we're told that at the end of his life, he is convinced by his advisors that after Yehoyada passes away, we'll see that, but he is convinced by his advisors that he should think of himself as some kind of a deity, because after all, he had managed to survive in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, where only the Kohen Gadol is supposed to go. So they say, you must be something really important, because you lived there for 6 years, and the Kohen Gadol can only go there for a day every year. In any case, so he finds himself there. So she puts him in the Chadar HaMitot, Vayastiru oto mipnei Ataliyahu v'lohumach, and they hired him from Ataliyahu, and he doesn't get put to death. Vahit ita Beit Hashem mitkabei shesh, and for 6 years he's hiding there in the Beit HaMikdash. Vataliyah molechat al aretz, and Ataliyah has taken over. She, in her mind, has become the queen, the ruler of this land. It has come into her control. Pasuk Dalad v'Shana Hashevi'it, in the seventh year of this happening, Shalach Yehoyada. So Yehoyada is the Kohen who is sort of watching over this boy, this Yoash, and is making sure that his life turns out well. And the pasuk is going to tell us that Yoash stays close to Hashem and serves Hashem properly all the time of Yehoyada. So he's an important influence on Yoash, and he makes sure that Yoash does what's right and good. So much of Yoash's kingdom will be seen as a positive experience for the Jewish people. So he gathers together. There apparently were different officers, Kari and Ratzim. Kari are the Giborim, the Radaksa, the Rashi says. They are the mighty ones, and the Ratzim are the runners. So you're gathering, they're officers for the two kinds of officers. It's an interesting thing because it says that there were different sort of segments to the army or the armed forces, recognizing their different things, would be akin to having, I don't know, infantrymen and cavalrymen here. There were runners who were very good at that. There could have been theoretically archers, and there were mighty warriors. And he's gathering the officers of all of them. And he brings them to the Beit HaMikdash. He makes a pact with them. And he makes them take an oath that they won't tell anybody what's going on, meaning whether you're going to be with us or not, you have to take an oath that you won't tell what's going on. And he shows them the prince. He shows them Yoash. Vayitzavim lemor zeh adavar shetasun hashlishit mikem ba'ei hashabbat v'shomrei mishmeret beit hamelech. He says, a third of you of the incoming mishmeret. So Rashi and the Radak point out that there was this system of incoming of weekly mishmerot of Kohanim and Leviim. So here these sarei meot apparently had something along those lines as well. So among the people coming in, he says, I want you to divide yourselves up. A third, go, v'shomrei mishmeret beit hamelech, should guard the palace, v'shlishit b'shar hasur, v'shlishit b'shar achar haratzim, v'shmatem mishmeret habayit misach. So you go to these three locations. So the king's palace, one gate and another gate, and you're going to have to watch the palace carefully. Again, so that's the third of you. We're going to split up into three parts. And then the two thirds are going to watch the Beit HaMikdash itself and guard for it that the people from the king's household aren't able to come into there, right? And guard him and make sure that he's going to be okay. So Rashi at least says that this was all necessary only until such time as Ataliah had been killed. In other words, in Rashi's vision, Yehoyada is taking these precautions because he doesn't know what Ataliah's power is. Another example of the lack of confidence they had in just declaring what was right and then going with it. They had to find their way to getting Yoash back onto the throne. So in Pasuk Chet, Yehoyada says, V'kaftem al ha-melech saviv, ish v'kelav v'yado, you stand around the king with your tools, with your weapons in your hand. The habala has they wrote you mad. Anybody who comes in, anybody who tries to get in to these ranks should be put to death. In other words, anybody who's coming in is trying to kill the king. And they have to be with the king on the way out and on the way in. In other words, we're going to crown the king, we're going to announce that he's king, but it's a dangerous time. We don't know how Ataliah react, we don't know how other people react. And therefore, you guys are now going to be the palace guard for the king, although the palace will temporarily be in the Beit HaMikdash, while the king still needs to be protected. So Yehoyada has now successfully engineered, it's not quite a rebellion, because Ataliah is the pretender to the throne, so it's a reconquest of the throne from the usurper, Ataliah. But it's interesting to watch a Kohen doing it, I mean, the Kohen having a very practical perspective. Ordinarily, Kohanim we might think of as being very involved in temple worship and thrusting their minds and hearts into that. And yet here he has a perfectly good and serviceable plan for how to get the king back into power. So the incoming Mishmeret, Emiot Eshabat and the outgoing Mishmeret, they all come together. And all the men come to him. So now they need weapons apparently, because either the weapons were one set of weapons that were given by each Mishmeret to the incoming Mishmeret, or just they didn't have any. So he gives them et hachanit ben hashalatim shel ha-melech David shel beit Hashem. David ha-melech had stored spears and shields in the Beit HaMikdash, and so he gives them that storehouse of these things. And the question would be, is it because they didn't have any weapons, or is it because he wants to symbolize to them and to everybody around them that these are the true continuation of David HaMelech's throne, of David HaMelech's reign. Vayamdu haratzim ish v'chelav v'yado miketav habayit hayamanit ad ketav habayit hasmonit l'mizbeach ol habayit al HaMelech saviv. So they stand all throughout the Beit HaMikdash. So it's from the right side all the way to the left side near the Mizbeach and near the Kodesh, surrounding the king, making sure that the Melech, that the king, is well taken care of. Vayotzir ben HaMelech v'yitein alav et ha-nezer. So now that he has the king well protected, he pulls him out and he puts on him the nezer ve'et ha'idut, so the crown and the edut. So the edut, the nezer ve'edut, Rashi says the edut is the sefer ha'torah. Meaning that there's a commandment for the king to always have a sefer Torah with him, and that by taking a crown and putting it on him and then giving him a sefer Torah to carry with him, that is a symbol of him being a fully Torah-sized, Torah-proper king. And that was what was going on. He was crowning him, and the coronation included the Edut, the sefer Torah, and they make him king, and they anoint him. And again, they anoint him because of the claim by Ataliah that she's the proper ruler. And they clapped, and they say, Yechi HaMelech. So on this, first on the Shlatim issue, on the weaponry that David HaMelech left in, so Radak says that it was the weapons that David would take to every war, and after he came back from every war, and all of the golden shields he took from people that he conquered, he would donate to the Beit HaMikdash. So it could be that there was just a lot of them, and therefore it made it much easier to amass weaponry without Ataliah noticing it. In other words, that whatever their private stores of weapons were, of these people coming to the Mishmarot, if all of a sudden they were arming themselves, Ataliah might have noticed, and therefore it might just theoretically have been a technical thing to help them get weapons without it becoming highly noticeable, so he gives them these weapons. But it's also possible that if that's the standard of David, as we said before, that this is a way of declaring their loyalty to the standard of David. When it comes to the crown, So the Pasuk says it was the crown, the Nezer, and the Edut, and the testimony. So Rashi had said the testimony means the Sefer Torah, because that's what he reads in all the time to make sure that he follows the Torah's path. But Rashi also quotes a Chazal that says that the crown was in fact its own testimony, that the crown used to adjust its size for those kings who were proper and appropriate for the throne, and then if somebody tried to rule who was improper, the crown would not fit him, and so that it was part of showing the people that the crown fits Yoash perfectly, and therefore that he should be king. Either way, it is the coronation ceremony. So in Pasuk Gimel, Vatishma Tal Yad Kol Haratzin Ha'am, Vatavo El Ha'am Beit Hashem. So she hears the people running around and all excited, so she comes to see them at the Beit HaMikdash. Vatere V'hineh HaMelech Omeid Ha'amud Kamishmat. She sees, and there's the king, standing like the king should, like in the king's place. Vasarim v'chatzotot al ha-melech, and there are officers, and there are trumpets being blown. V'cholamar tzamech, everybody's happy. V'tokeh v'chatzotot, and they're all blowing the trumpets and the horns. V'tikra tal yad begadeh, and she tears her clothing. V'tikra kesher kasher. And she says, oh, it's a rebellion. They're rebelling against me. So first I notice the people's happiness, I think, is worth noticing. The people are excited. So does that mean that they didn't like Atalia all the way through and they were just waiting for the chance to rebel against her? That's one possibility. Or is it that just the people enjoy having a king? And now that they have a king again, even though Atalia was a queen, they enjoy having a king, and the fact of a king is very exciting to them, and it's not a question of whether they prefer Yoash to Atalia. And her reaction now is also worth noticing. She says, Kesher Kasher, it's a rebellion. She's the usurper here, and yet she doesn't see it that way. She's the one who killed the royal family to take over the throne. And yet, when she sees the rightful king restored to his place, her response is that it's a rebellion, and that it's a revolt, and that it's a change in the order of what should be. So her self-delusion, I think, carries lesson with it. He says to these officers of hundreds who were his helpers and who are the ones organizing the military side of this rebellion, he says, take her out, but not all the way out. Meaning, take her out from where she is now, but keep her within this derot, which is the ranks of the guards, and keep her there. And Rashi says, why do you have to keep her there and kill her there? Rashi says, take her in an inner path. Rashi thinks that there's a direct connection between where the guards are standing and a sort of a secret way for the king and whoever, there are any royals, to get into the Beit HaMikdash. He says, take her that way to the palace. Don't let her go out any other way. And Rashi says, pent themselves because she might find people to help her. Another striking example. For all that we see the people very excited about the king, Rashi thinks that Yehoyada is still worried. There are people out there who prefer Atalia, would side with Atalia. So they take her out. Vabacharam made Bacharam, who comes after her kill, because they're obviously supporters of hers. Ki amar ha-kohen al-tumat Beit Hashem. The reason why he didn't take her out at all was because he preferred not to have bloodshed in the Beit HaMikdash. Ve'yasim le'yadayim v'tavo derech mevo hasusim Beit HaMelech v'tumat Sham. And they bring her, they take her, the horse's way into the palace, and she gets killed, and that's the end of Atalia. So that's the coronation of Yoash. So the rest of Perek Yud Aleph tells us about all the good things that he's going to do, and then in Perek Yud Bet we'll continue the story of Yoash and his rule, which is a break with the evil that we've seen in the past, and a break with the connection to the family of to the house of Achav, and a return, at least for some of the time of Yoash's life, a return to the standards of David HaMelech and to the house of David that we have seen before. So, Vayichrot Yehoyada, the Brit Bein Hashem uvein HaMelech uvein HaAm Liot Na'am LaHashem. He makes a pact between the people, between Hashem and the king and the people. So the Rashi and Radak both point out that this is a three-way pact. It's first a pact between Hashem and between the Melech and the people, and after that, and between all of them, I'm sorry, the other way around, Rashi has it, that first, it's a pact that they'll follow Hashem, and after that, the people will follow the Melech. And so it's this three-way pact. You have to do, so he makes his pact, Yod Lam Hashem, Uvein HaMelech, Uvein Ha'am, because the Pasuk says it that way. Vayavo Cholam Haaretz Beit HaBaal Vayitzu, so now they come to the house of Baal, and they destroy it. Et Mizbechotav Vetzlamav Shibru Heitev, so they well break his altars and his idols. Ve'eit Matan Kohen Abba al Haragu lifnei hamizbechot. And Matan is the name of a guy, and he was a priest of Baal, and they kill him right there. Ve'asam haKohen pigudot al pe'et Hashem. And then Yehoyada makes officers and administrators over Beit Hashem to make it work out well. All of the people, the officers and the military people that had helped him with his rebellion or his restoration, and all of the people. So they bring him now they escort him from where he had been hiding, from the temple which had become the source of his power, and they've had this pact. And so now they escort him to his rightful place in the throne, in the palace, and he sits on the throne. So everybody's happy now, or it says that everybody, or the masses are happy. The people of the land are very happy, and the city gets quiet, and Netanyahu has been killed. So this is already where the Sephardim start reading the Haftarah of Parashat Shekalim, so it's part of sort of the reformation that will occur in terms of the Beit HaMikdash that we'll see in Perek Yud Bet, but it's a story of rebellion and of a break in the Davidic rule that has now been put back. But that break in the Davidic rule, Chazal in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadeh Amud Aleph, see as the fulfillment of a punishment that had been owed to David. So it's a strange story, in that the Gemara represents Hashem saying to David, you know, it was your fault that Nov got killed. Because David, when he's first running from Shaul, runs to Nov, and he has nothing with him. He fled with nothing. So he takes some food, and he takes the sword of Goliath, and the people of Nov get killed by Shaul, because Shaul says, if you helped him, you must have known that he was running for me, and therefore you're rebelling, and you're on his side. And then also that David, with Doeg HaEdomi, Doeg had been the reason that Doeg had fallen, or had gotten, not fallen in terms of spirituality, and had been lost for various reasons, and also the deaths of Shaul and his three sons. So the Gemara has David being blamed for all of that. That's a topic worth discussing at some other time on its own, as to whether David really should bear any culpability for any of those things. But in any case, Hashem presents him with a choice. His descendants could be all destroyed, or he, David, would be given over into the hands of his enemies. So first he chooses, give me into the hands of my enemies. It'll be punishment that will apply to me. Put me in my hands of my enemies. And that's a better punishment. So then there's a whole story of David coming and being tricked into meeting up with one of Goliath's brothers, Yishbi Benov. And Yishbi Benov sees him and knows that he kills Goliath and is doing various things and torturing David. And David therefore says, you know, I was wrong. I'd rather have my descendants all be destroyed. And here's where it happens. Atalia destroys, as our pasuk says, Atalia destroys the entire royal family, which is the Davidic line. And then the Gemara says, but they left when she left Yoash. So there too in Nov, Evyatar was left, fled. So it's just a strange Gemara, and one worth pondering in terms of what's David's responsibility, and what does it mean that since somebody was left from Nov there, David has somebody left from it here. So the Gemara apparently, I think you have to assume, the Gemara is saying that this incident with Atalia is a reflection of something that happened way back when, that David wasn't careful enough with the lives of the city of Nov, and therefore his family itself, at a point where they sort of deserved it because they had not done well and they'd been doing evil in this time, and they had gotten caught up in the family of Achav, and they allowed Baal and things like that to infect the southern kingdom as well, that David in that time would therefore be open to, would be prone to, would be liable for having his family meet similar fates. But the saving grace sort of is that Nov didn't get destroyed completely, and therefore Yoash survives as well. So that Gemara places our Perek in the context of this, of what a break it could have been in Jewish history, meaning that Hashem had declared David HaMelech to be the future, the long-standing, the historic future that will always be true, that will be eventually a Melech for Beit David, and that the incident with Nov came very close to allowing this incident with Atalia becoming the end of the Davidic line, and yet it didn't work out that way, and Hashem probably knew that, and therefore that's why Hashem can make the promise that it would be always and forever. But this parak then takes on a greater significance and importance than you might think. It's not just the quelling of Atalia, it's the recovery from a danger that was very close to being a complete change of course for the Jewish people in terms of their national leadership. Have a great day.